Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Be with the commandment today, thou shalt not commit adultery. I think that's been gravely misunderstood, not in what it means, but why it's so important. I think we often feel like that God's wearing a gigantic black hat, and if we enjoy it, he's against it. That is certainly not what this is talking about. Boy, in our day in America, human sexual freedom is something that man thinks is his right. Well, I feel like that God has given us some guidelines for our good. And this command is one of those guidelines, meant for our happiness in society. I hope you'll listen to what I say, think through it, and see if you agree with me on that. It is obvious that this command is related to our respect for God. You see, our respect for God through all these commands has been seen in how we treat God and how we treat others who are made in His image. We worship God not just in coming to the right place and saying the right thing, but we also worship God in how we treat others in His name. So all these commands are given to the covenant community. I think that's very important. The way we treat our neighbor's life, our neighbor's wife, our neighbor's property, and then how we feel, our motives about all that, is really the flow of these last few commandments. It's giving us appropriate guidelines for how covenant men ought to live together and what their true attitude ought to be. I think that the parallel in Deuteronomy that also shows some variation, not in this command, but in some other ones, shows us that these 10 words, 10 commandments, the Decalogue, can be applied differently in different situations with the same thrust. Obviously, the Exodus material was given to the people in their wilderness wandering. But the Deuteronomic material was given as they're about to become not nomadic, but settled as they crossed into the Promised Land. I think it's appropriate to interpret these in light of our day and still say, thus saith the Lord. It's even possible that the different order of these commands in the Septuagint shows that they relate to a neighbor and that there's some variety possible. As with the commandment to respect our parents, gave a promise to a long and stable society, I think this command related to the sanctity of marriage, to the godliness of the home is going to be a key and a pillar to a stable society. Those societies that choose to abuse parents, choose to abuse sexual fidelity, will find themselves in great, great straits in the history of man. Oh, that's scary for us, isn't it, friends? Yes, it is. This command also implies God's ownership and control of our sexual and family lives. You see, it's not just our body, I'll do with it what I please. Our body is given to us by God. We are stewards of our body as well as of our family and of our passions and how we control them and limit them says something of our love and maturity in the area of faith. This command seems to have been based on Genesis 2:24, as the fourth commandment seems to have been based on Genesis 2:1-3. So obviously God not only gave Genesis to Moses as a background of the human condition, but also as some theological guidelines for how God wants man to live. Now, it's obvious that the major word study we have to do in this brief little passage is the word adultery. In the Old Testament, there seems to be a distinction between the Hebrew word for adultery and the Hebrew word for fornication. Adultery means that either the man or the woman involved is married. Fornication means that the two partners, neither one, are married. Now, by the time we come to the New Testament, the Greek words seem to have lost that distinction. And so, porneia We get the word pornography from it. The Greek word can mean sexual abuse of any kind. Okay? Let's see. If you want to see the concept of fornication, it would be the warnings against a young man joining himself to a harlot. You might want to see Proverbs 29:3, Proverbs 21:3, and Proverbs 1 through 9 really warns young men about this danger. Now, I think it's important that we see that the reason this truth is emphasized is because of the inheritance rights of ancient Israel. I want to explain that. Making love is the normal, acceptable, biological way that God has created us and chosen us to continue the race. And He has made our bodies in such a way that it's an enjoyable experience for us, and it's a very strong drive within all animals, including man. But I think it's important we see that God is not putting some taboo on this physical act, but because man is uniquely related to God, all of man's life has a religious aspect. That's true of our sexual life, too. It's not that making love is some kind of horrendous sin, but uniquely in the Old Testament, the inheritance rights were involved in this. Think about God's promise to Abraham in Genesis 12, 15, 17, 22. A promise of a seed and a promise of a land. Now, I think it's important we realize that the Jews, when they allotted the different tribal allocations just before they crossed over the Jordan into Joshua, the book of Joshua, the conquest, that every tribe was getting certain land. And it became very important in ancient Israel that a man had descendants to keep the land in the family. That's what Levirate marriage is all about. That's what the year of the Sabbath year is all about. That's what the year of Jubilee is all about. The land reverted to its original owners. And therefore, you can see how adultery would so mess up that. The land would it'd be hard to go back to the original owner when you didn't know who the original owner was because adultery complicated it. So I think it is a sin because it's out of the bounds that God has given us. I don't think it's the unpardonable sin. I don't think it's a sin that mars you for life. I do think it's a sin. I think it has consequences in our family, in our personal life. It'll leave scars. It's not the will of God. And because our day, we're bombarded with these commercials and emphasis on everybody's doing it. It's not so bad. It is. Now, it's not bad because the physical act is so horrendous. It's bad because of what it does to interpersonal relationships. It's bad because it treats people as things, as objects for personal gratification. And it's bad in this original context because of the inheritance emphasis of the Jewish people. Adultery was culturally condemned long before the Mosaic legislation of Exodus 20. If we go back to the book of Genesis, particularly Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 and following, Genesis 20, verse 11 and following, Genesis 26, verse 7 and following, and Genesis 39:9, we see that this was thought of as a sin not only among the Hebrew people, but among the surrounding Canaanite people as well. And that sometimes God's patriarchs, particularly Abraham and Isaac, in trying to say their wives were their sisters, really caused some other kings, be it the Egyptian king or the king of the Philistines, Abimelech, to be appalled at the level of their morality. It seems that adultery is not only, it has three different focuses. And think about this. In the context of Exodus 20, it's a sin against one's neighbor. You might want to see Deuteronomy 5:18, which is the parallel. These three very sharp little commands, two Hebrew words each, show us are basically focused about our neighbor and his rights. It's also a sin against marriage, and I wanted to read that. That's in Exodus chapter 18, verse 20. Exodus 18:20. And you shall not have intercourse with your neighbor's wife to be defiled with her. There's something about the that's not that sex is defiling. That, please don't get me wrong. Boy, I'm pro-sex. I like it. It's great. It's godly. He thought of it. So sex is not defiling. It's the fact that you took your neighbor's wife and somehow in that process she was defiled that causes a real problem. It's also a sin against God. That's obvious from Genesis chapter 20, verses 1 through 13, and Genesis 26, verse 7 through 11. It was so serious that this was punishable by death. I want to read a couple of examples of that, if you let me. You say, well, why was it so serious? Because not because the act was that, it was the inheritance rights. Listen to this. This is Leviticus 20, verse 10. If there is a man who commits adultery with another man's wife, the one who commits adultery with his friend's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. And then think also of this one, if you would, Deuteronomy 22, verses 22 through 24. Listen to this one now. If a man is found lying with a married woman, then both of them shall die, the man who labored the woman and the woman. Thus you shall purge the evil from Israel. If there is a girl who is a virgin engaged to a man, and another man finds her in a city and lies with her, then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city, and you shall stone them to death, the girl because she did not cry out in the city, and the man because he has violated his neighbor's wife. Engaged, but still considered neighbor's wife. Thus you shall purge the evil from among you. But if in the field a man finds a girl who is engaged, and the man forces her and lies with her, the only the man who lies with her shall die. But you shall do nothing to the girl. There is no sin in the girl worthy of death. For just as a man raises against his neighbor and murders him, so is this case. And when he found her in the field, the engaged girl cried out, but there was no one to save her. Now, I read that for this reason. It's very important that we realize that there is a distinction between the guilt of a woman and the guilt of a man in this ancient culture. There almost seems to be some license for men going to prostitutes that's condemned as being foolish, but no death penalty. And yet for a girl caught in that, it's always the death penalty. And yet there is a fairness for those that I just mentioned to you showed that the death penalty was for both. It was considered a serious sin against the community. In Ezekiel 16:40, it's used in a metaphor sense, but still used. Israel was considered to be a whoring after other gods when she went after them. Now, I want to say there's some strict warnings found in Proverbs chapters 1 through 9, and you ought to notice those. Now, I want to deal briefly with the relationship to the New Testament. Jesus, in quoting Leviticus 19:18, which basically says, we're to love our neighbor as ourself, sums it up in Luke 10:27, Jesus does, by quoting Leviticus 19:18, where our actions toward our neighbor, in a real sense, determine our attitude toward God. And the whole law can be summed up, Jesus says, in loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love our neighbor as ourself. These Ten Commandments show that the treatment of others reflects our understanding and love for God. That's why Jesus can use this as a summary verse for all the law and the prophets. And I think these verses are related in their original context primarily to our covenant neighbor. This is also one of the examples that Jesus used in Matthew 5:28, the Sermon on the Mount. And he places an emphasis on the motive behind it. Several years ago, President Jimmy Carter did an interview for Playboy magazine where he discussed that he had lust in his heart several times after women. Everybody was shocked and appalled and said, oh. And I think it was somewhat dumb for him to do an interview for a magazine like that. But I personally appreciated his honesty. For I think there is characteristic in the strong sexual drive within human beings. There is either fantasizing before or after marriage. And I think the problem we have to find in that is not in the imagination being the evil, but the Jews recognize that the eyes and the ears are the seedbed of the heart. Proverbs 23:7, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. If we're always consumed about wanting to be sexually with some other person, it reflects what our heart's like, and usually what our heart's like is going to work out to our hand. So Jesus put the real problem not in the act, but in the motive. Just a sideline here. He raised the level of intensity of the true interpretation of the Ten Commandments from acts to motive, and thereby put it beyond the reach of all fallen man. Therefore, I think this is where we see the beauty of this, in that 2 Corinthians 5:21, God took him who knew no sin, made him to become a sin offering, or sin, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. He raised the level. Then he fulfilled it in himself and gave it back to us as a free gift. Oh my. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And the Bible has accurately said of us, as in the days of Noah, man's heart is on evil continually. This is one example of that. The Sermon on the Mount, like the Ten Commandments, undercuts every moral stance of man and shows us our need for salvation and redemption. The ten words are also interpreted by Paul, particularly in Galatians chapter 2, verse 15, through chapter 3, verse 29, as bringing man to the place to recognize his spiritual need of God. Therefore, the ten words and the Sermon on the Mount are like schoolmasters that lead us to Christ. That's a very important understanding, I think. Now I want to come to a couple of modern applications that I hope will be helpful. Sometime in these Ten Commandments, I hope I've said some things that have caused you to think and analyze what you've always heard. Because these commands are so brief, sometime we interpret them in very cultural ways without looking at their original context. And sometimes we look at their original context so much we forget they have to apply to our day. I hope that you'll pray and study these and walk in the light that you have. Maybe my comments will be more to stimulate your thought than to be dogmatic guidelines for me to try to give to you. Marriage is possibly the best modern analogy for a lifelong faith commitment in God's name. It is our best chance in our culture to understand the realities of the Old Testament covenant principles. In Malachi chapter 2, verse 14, it talks about stay with the wife of your youth, your covenant partner. I think it's real important we see that when we in God's name make a promise to someone else, we don't know them completely. We don't know them. We don't know all the problems we're going to face together. But because we've made a commitment, we follow through with that. Isn't that what God has done for us? And maybe the fact that as we are unfaithful in our marriage vows, and we can understand culturally what that means, because maybe if we haven't done it with the act, we've done it with the mind, with the heart, then we can understand something of the religious analogy about what it means to be faithful to God. I think that's very important. Our respect for our mate in all aspects includes human sexuality will help us understand the thrust of this verse. Even in marriage, we can abuse our partner if we see them just as objects to gratify only our own desires. Adultery can even happen with someone who's married when we treat people in ways that do not reflect their preciousness to God and their worth as an individual. Marriage that is stable and characterized by loyalty is one of the major pillars for the strength and stability for a society. God help us, we can see the shakiness of American culture when it comes to the commandment about honor your mother and father, and when it comes to the commandment about do not commit adultery. God help us, morning television is nothing more than a series of perverted sexuality that are just scarfed up as vicarious sex sins by the vast majority of American culture. We lust after sexual experiences not knowing that in Christ, in God, one man, one woman, is the greatest sexual experience we can have. It needs to be emphasized that human sexuality is a gift from God. It was His idea for man. He created us sexual beings. The guidelines are not meant to thwart man's freedom and joy in this area, but they are meant to help fallen man have long-term joy and happiness in this area. Although man has abused sexuality, as he has all of God's gift, it is still a powerful drive worthy of submission to the guidelines of God. Sex must be guarded so that the sacredness of human personality, both male and female, is respected, because we are made in His image, and how we treat one another sexually will say something about how we respect God. I want to say a word to you that have already been involved in some kind of sexual sin. Maybe you haven't committed physical adultery with your body, but you have with your mind. Maybe you're trapped in long-term masturbation as a way of fulfilling sexual desire instead of a marriage mate. Sexual sin is not something that's going to send you to an eternal hell. There are many who are truly saved by Christ's death who have tremendous problems with this powerful human drive. God wants to give you happiness, joy, and stability in your sexual life. It comes with an understanding about that you are made in His image and that others are also. And He cares about individuals. He has given us guidelines to help us find real happiness and joy. Jesus raised the ante of this from the Old Testament when He put it in the area of motives. God help us, we need to yield this aspect of our lives to Him. We need to make sure that as all human drives need to be controlled, in God's name, this one does too. And my brothers and sisters, if there's ever an area that the evil one has torn the church up in, it's this area. It is my personal belief that if we could have strong, godly, faithful homes, we would have win more people to Christ than if we have revival meetings. What the world needs more than anything is to see Christianity lived out in home between a man and a woman, to see faithfulness and loyalty and joy. I think we need more marriage enrichment than we need anything in the modern church, for the evil one is destroying our witness, destroying our homes through the godless culture we live in. If we could ever see that this commandment is just one aspect of the iceberg of human sexuality, and when Jesus speaks about the lust of the heart, He's really saying about something that all of us need to work on and give to God in faith. My friend, God can forgive you. He can wash you white as snow. He can restore your home. He can bring you and your spouse together again in joy that you've never known, if you can just turn this powerful area of your life over to Him. Two books that I want to mention that have helped me tremendously in the study of these Ten Commandments. One of them especially, called The Ten Words by Roy Honeycutt. I think it'll help you to understand these commands and how they apply to your life. I hope you'll get this little book. It's put out by Broadman Press, and I think it'll be a blessing to your life. A little more technical book is called The Book of Exodus by Childs. It's put out by Westminster Publication. It is a very technical book. It's in a thing called the Old Testament Library Series. Childs teaches at Union Seminary, I believe. But this book has helped me more in Hebrew word studies, in understand the original context. And I want to say, just like the command on thou shalt not murder had to be understood in its day and then applied in a wider realm, this command must be understood in its own day. Inheritance rights is the problem. But the universal truth applies to our day. And I think this little book, The Book of Exodus by Childs, C-H-I-L-D-S, will really be a help to you. Well, I know these things are hard to talk about. I hope I haven't embarrassed you. I haven't meant to. I think we ought to talk about sex more openly, its abuse and its joys. I think if we could, we'd understand that God's people are hurting in this area, that God's people are tempted in this area, but that God's people also have experienced joy far beyond those who do not know our Christ. The Ten Commandments are for a redeemed community. We need to respect our neighbor. We need to respect our mate. We need to respect God in them. And society will be a happy place to live. Well, I've really enjoyed being with you, and I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.